Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Amy Myers with the Myers Way podcast. I'm flying solo today. John's out, but I'm very excited to introduce our guest today, who is Bob Root. He is the founder and chief officer of Keys Care. It's a chemical-free beauty care line that we have in our office, and I love greatly. So, Bob, I'd love you to just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself. I know that you originally started in the tech world and not really in the skincare line. So we'd love to hear a little bit about your background and how you even got into this business in the first place.
Well, sure, Amy. It's great to hear your voice again and good to talk to you. Simplest way to sort of give a little bit of an overview of our product and our company is that back now about 12 years ago, my wife Wendy was diagnosed with melanoma. She was lucky that she caught it in time. She's been melanoma free since then, but has had numerous different skin cancers. It's sort of her heritage, her German heritage, has that clear, light skin, which is she's also full of moles, and that's a sort of a precursor to skin cancers. But in any case, when she was diagnosed and had the surgery to remove the melanoma, it went very, very well. Except following the surgery, she had significant skin problems, and as it turned out, over the years, we discovered that it was really being caused, or we believe it to be and still believe it to be caused by the residual chemicals that were used to make up her skincare creams and sunscreens and various different prescription products. And we now actually know that they had a lot of the dirty dozen chemicals in them, and even more at higher levels than even the over-the-counter products. And so how we got started was, my background is originally mechanical engineering, and then moved into the world of quantum physics and micro and nano machines. I was working in Silicon Valley as a CEO of a hard disk company. And so I was very used to small, little, tiny spaces and machines. And I started to realize that what was going on with Wendy was that she was having these skin disorders that some days would mimic rosacea, some days psoriasis, all sorts of different things, adult acne. And what we noticed was is that they would change and they would morph and they would come in and out. And I started to map those against the products that she was using, the prescription products, and would realize that she was having certain reactions based on the particular type of products, the prescriptions she was using. So as an engineer, I did the honorable things. We joke and we say that chemists add and engineers subtract. So being an engineer, I took all of her products away from her and actually put her on Dr. Bronner's soap, peppermint castile soap, and she actually saw improvement. But Bronner's was just a tad too much for her, so started to make my own soap for her, and we gave it to friends that were visiting from Europe, and it had worked wonders for Wendy, and her doctors at Johns Hopkins thought it was great. And we started to realize that it was having effects on some of our friends' kids that had acne that started to go away. And so we actually were convinced by our friends to start to productize the soap, which now has bloomed to about 20 different products, and they are in the beauty area as well as in the therapeutic area. We have a what we call the yellow line that we add special functional ingredients to help with different skin disorders. And then we also have a very pure line of skincare products as well as hair care.
And that's actually how I found out about you. I was at Well People here in Austin, Texas, which is an all-natural makeup store, and they had a couple of your products. And I picked up one of the Medicare, which is the yellow line that you spoke to, for my dog. Someone told me there that it's really helpful for hot spots. So I used it on my dog, and her hot spots went away, and it was great. And then I started sort of exploring some of your other products. And I always tell people that there, you can read the ingredients and know what the ingredients are, and you can practically eat them, which is one of the things that I love about your products. It's not a bunch of chemical names. It's things like carrot oil and aloe vera and things that you've actually heard of. So then I started using your products and love the eye butter. So anybody out there, the eye butter is to die for. All the women in my family every year for Christmas look forward to it because they know they're getting an eye butter. And, and then I reached out to you, and you actually came 1 year and spoke at my office to a group of people about the book that you had just released at the time. And it was so fascinating to hear, because I love how you say, it must be one of the reasons that I got along with you so well and why I get along with engineers, about that taking away. I mean, that's exactly what I do in my clinic. You know, we take away foods and then sort out which ones are, you know, causing the problem. So I really love that approach to what, you know, how you practiced and figured that out. And it is pretty amazing, some of the things that I learned from you, that there are about 20,000 chemicals in personal care products, and less than 1% of them, you know, have been tested, and that there's really no government oversight to the personal care industry. Can you go into a little bit more about that? It's really quite fascinating.
Well, yeah, the book, when we started, and I do appreciate the invite to come there. It was a lot of fun to talk to some of your patients. Well, the Environmental Working Group and the Safe Cosmetics Compact originally asked me to do a book about the industry. And the concept was, at the time, was to sort of give people a sense of what was going on within the industry. And frankly, it was so dynamic at the time that I was sort of getting frustrated with trying to even start the book, that I decided, well, I'll write one specifically about things that people ask me when I go to events like the one I did for you. And the whole idea of all these 20,000 chemicals, and it's even more now, has been the point of the Environmental Working Group, that there is no regulation of what chemicals go on our bodies versus what goes in them. And, of course, we know from various different things like the smoking patches and some of the patches that are used now for all sorts of prescriptions, that we do actually take in chemicals through our skin, and it does get into our bodies. And so originally, when I set up and wanted to do the products, it wasn't for the fact that I knew that there were all these bad chemicals and all these things. I just didn't know enough, or wasn't smart enough, because I wasn't a chemist, to know that I was supposed to be using them. So ironically, when I put things together, they were sort of old ancient remedies, but I started using better pharmaceutical grade, but whole functional type of ingredients, like avocado oil and aloe vera and things like that. And so the desire I had was to create products that didn't cause problems versus ones that actually started to help the people's skin disorders. So when I started to write the book, as I said earlier, it was about trying to find products for people that would help them. And what I started to discover was that many of the people that I met on the road, many of the people I met during speeches, had skin disorders that were very similar to Wendy's, in that they were mimicking things like psoriasis and eczema. And what happened was that in this realization, I started to look at the chemicals that some of these 20,000 chemicals, specifically ones called the Dirty Dozen. And these were products or ingredients that were in products that were typically found in most of all the skincare products and hair care products that are on the market, in the high 90%. And I started to notice that things like parabens and sulfates were actually starting to cause a lot of these skin disorders. And that's what I talk about a lot in the book, is the relationship to how a lot of these chemicals got involved in skincare products, and also what they do and why they could be causing causing these problems.
And I think our listeners, I mean, if you can go into a little bit about that, I mean, we, you know, many of my patients at least know to avoid those things and know, you know, about the environmental working group and know the, what was, I guess, once the Dirty Dozen is now the Dirty 30.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know that people really know what those chemicals are and what they're really doing. So if you do have that knowledge and background, I'm sure people would, you know, like to dig a little deeper into that.
Sure. Well, the ones that I focus on the most are the bactericides that are used in products. There's a lot of disorders that are related to sulfates and things like that, and that's almost a whole show unto itself. But the ones that I focus on are things called parabens and also a particular nasty ingredient called triclosan. Parabens are used inside of most skincare products that are not natural or what we call conventional skincare products. And they're used to basically kill the bacteria that could exist inside the bottle and do that for a long, long, long period. And that in one sense is a really good thing because, you know, when you open a bottle, it's going to be bacteria free. The problem is that those chemicals, those parabens, methyl parabens specifically, when you put it on your skin, you now have an issue where that same bactericide is killing the good colony bacteria and the bacteria that help create a good, healthy environment for our skin. And it's something we really shouldn't lose here, but there's 10 to 20 times more bacteria on your skin than there are actually skin cells. And most of that bacteria works in a symbiotic way. But without losing the thought, going back to these parabens, when you put it on your skin and you kill that bacteria, you're exposing your skin to all sorts of other bacteria that's not as friendly. But here's the real rub. The rub is I think some statistic I read from the environmental working group said that for the average woman, she'll use 38 products on her skin every day. Now, if that's true, and there's 0.5% of methyl paraben in each of those products, you can quickly figure out that there's almost 19% methyl paraben on the skin after that application of all these different products. And so now at 19%, you now have a significant damage to your skin, not only just the bacteria, but the skin cells themselves.
Yeah, and there's so many things that make me want to comment here about that. I mean, most of my patients and certainly listeners out there have heard me talking about the gut and how we now realize that, yes, there are more bacteria in us and on us than there are of our own cells. And really a lot of medical research is going towards that, the ecosystems, as you kind of mentioned, both on the skin and in the gut, and how all those bacteria really are there to regulate and protect us. And now that we have this really clean society with you know, if we're just talking about skincare products, but with the antibacterial soaps and the Purell and everything everywhere, that there is this whole hygiene hypothesis that we have killed off all this good bacteria. And yes, now we have problems such as eczema and asthma and leading to, you know, high rates of all kinds of either skin disorders or other health issues because of that.
Yeah. And I'm not only shocked at how many products that you would never suspect to have parabens in them do, or even triclosan. We discovered in the writing of the book that some of the plastic wrap that's used for cheese and things like that that we buy have triclosan molded into them to keep bacteria growth down. And, you know, things like these antibacterial bowls or these antibacterial clothing that you have, many of them have colloidal silver, which is much better than something like triclosan, but it's not real, not great for the skin. And there was some recent work that we did. Well, it's a little bit older now, but with National Institutes of Health, in regard to exactly what you're talking about, kids that were raised so clean that they have no guard on their skin anymore.
In regards to what you're saying about the cheese, yes, I remember you mentioning that in your event at my office, and I was really taken aback by that. Thankfully, I don't eat cheese, but my guess is anything coming in wrappers these days, it's probably going to be the norm rather than the exception that that's going to be happening. And then the other thing that I remember from the event, and all of this is in your book, the event was surrounding your book, is how products, I too have heard that statistic about from the Environmental Working Agency, you know, using all these different products, and that the government says, well, it's really not unsafe because there's such a small amount of parabens. But then when you have the statistic that you or the Environmental Working Agency says that we're using all these body products, that then it adds up to a lot. But I seem to remember you also giving me a statistic that when you're even buying a body product that says no parabens, that if they're getting sourced, you know, several different ingredients from different people, if they have less than a certain amount of paraben, then they don't have to report it to the company who's buying that. And then when they're getting, you know, five ingredients from five different people who have some small amount of paraben that they didn't have to report, then it then comes into their product and it might be, you know, whatever it is now, two grams or whatever it is of parabens is now in this product. But because the products leading up to this one product, they don't have to disclose it. Am I getting all that correctly?
Yeah, not only that, but actually even it's more insidious than that. I actually had I think I shared at your event that I even had a salesperson from a quote natural products ingredient company wink and tell me that they actually put in parabens so that I don't have to, and so that I can claim that there's no parabens added. And that was a sort of a phrase that was like a wake up call for me, because I see that on bottles and I wonder sometimes what it means, meaning are there parabens in there and the manufacturer didn't add them, or, you know, what's the situation there? Now, I'll quickly want to point out too that I don't believe that most of the natural products companies would hear that or would do that. But I do know that most of them are very small, so they don't know and they don't have ways of testing to find out what's in the ingredients they're buying.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, so we as consumers, right, because it's sort of like gluten-free or all natural, or, you know, green products. I mean, it's become the hype, and so people are capitalizing on that. So how can we as a consumer know, besides obviously buying your products, but how can we as a consumer know what we're getting, or how can we protect ourselves?
Well, first of all, you have to have a relationship with the manufacturer of any of your products, whether it's foods. You know, we all have favorites. We go to one of my favorite stores near you, Central Market, and I trust that market. And then when I'm in the market, I have trust with them. And then I look for brands that I know that I trust, or that the trusted advisors within the store know that are clean. And that's the first biggest and best step is to build relationships with the manufacturers. And the way I suggest to people doing that is first of all, if you look at the ingredients and there's only a few and they're whole, ingredients that don't have a lot of Latin names around them, that's a pretty good sign that people are being in integrity of what they're creating. If you see a lot of Latin names or 30 or 40 or 50 ingredients, you have to start to be able to be concerned about what's in there. And I jokingly tell people, you know, if you can't pronounce it, it's probably not a good idea to just buy it. You need to go back to the manufacturer and ask them, is this all that's in there? And we do, as a manufacturer, get a lot of people on our customer service saying to us, is this everything? Is what's on your label all that's in your products? And how do you know? And we tell them because we're the designers of the products and we have chromatographs that we can actually analyze what's in the products. And on top of that, it's sort of our integrity in the way we began our business. And there's a lot of natural products manufacturers that are out there. And the quickest and simplest way is that if they have clear ingredients on the label, then it's a pretty good chance that they're a clear and open company.
Right. And I remember when I first, you know, started using your products, you know, a lot of people reach out to me now that my business is growing and I'm having more of a natural presence and say, hey, would you review this product for us? And I actually, it's kind of my policy. I don't really do that. I don't want to get into reviewing things for people. But certainly I offer that they can send me something. And if I love it, I'll be happy to, you know, tweet about it or Facebook about it or something. And it actually, after I used your products, I approached you all and said, if you ever need a doctor or you need some testimonial, like I'll be happy to give it to you, because literally I'm holding one of the bottles of one of my favorite lotions, which is your Luminos. I mean, I think there are about 8 ingredients here, all of which I can pronounce, and I'll be happy to read them off. And then one of the things with a lot of natural products I find is they're not very effective, you know, so you're sort of compromising. You typically may be paying a higher price for something because you really are getting really quality ingredients. The company has the background that you guys have. They've really investigated it. It's probably a smaller company, so cost may typically just be a little bit higher. And so I'm fine doing that. But then when the quality is lower, it's kind of like, okay, why do I have to pay this higher price to sacrifice that my dishes aren't as clean or my clothes aren't as clean or my hair doesn't feel as great? And I just felt with you guys, like I wasn't sacrificing quality the quality of a product for it being all natural. And I'm just going to read this off for you guys. And I mean, again, I have no affiliation with them whatsoever. In fact, Bob declined my writing any kind of testimonial. So there's nothing here. This is pure just love of this company. So 100% natural, vegan, gluten-free, and biodegradable. I mean, how awesome is that? Avocado-free oil, shea butter, carrot seed oil, black seed oil, agave aloe vera, blood orange oil, clary sage oil, purified water, vegetable glycerin, Keys vegetable wax, and rosemary extract. So, I mean, literally, practically could eat this.
Well, and, you know, the interesting thing about that is that what most people don't know, and I actually didn't know when I started in this, is that you can buy an avocado oil, and this is going to be true of all the ingredients in all of our products or any products that you see, but I'll just pick avocado oil. You can buy a refined avocado oil that is basically stripped of all of its nutrients. It's inexpensive. You can claim it on the label that it's avocado oil, or you can choose as a manufacturer to buy a virgin avocado oil that has all of the omegas that are in there, and you can test it, and you're going to pay 8-10 times more for that. And it's true for all the ingredients. You can buy a refined shea butter that's fundamentally nothing more than a condenser, or you can buy a shea butter that has huge levels of all good things for you, without getting into the details of what's in the shea butter. So, but to your point is that when I remember seeing, it's a couple years ago now, a tissue company saying with a hint of aloe on the outside of the box. And oh, by the way, it also had sodium lauryl sulfate in it, but that's aside. The marketing words that people will use not only will kind of bend what the quality of the ingredient is, but they'll also bend what the proportion is. So for people, you've got to look at what's in the product. Is it whole or is it estered or separated? Is it the finest oils and waxes and butters that you can get? And do you put enough in to actually do something? And so that's sort of our mantra when we create a new product, is it actually has to work. And we also don't take 10 different product names and put the same formula in and say it does all these various different things. We also believe that every product should have multi-use. So that's sort of the intricacy and the formulary of how we go about things. We want to make sure that it makes people feel good, but we also want to make sure that it solves their problems.
And speaking of, in your book, you say that the CDC estimates that 63% of Americans have some sort of skin disorder. What, using your products, what kind of skin disorders have you all gotten feedback that have resolved in using them?
Well, oh my gosh. Of course, we have issues with the Food and Drug Administration of not being able to make claims. So we, like many people, get around that by saying our customers tell us. And our customers do tell us that they have many times been diagnosed with eczema, psoriasis, rosacea, adult acne, things like that, many of which have had it for tens of years. And I can't tell you how many people that have been literally in tears in front of me because they've used our products and their disorders have gone away. Now, at the same time, I have to also say to you that it's sort of like if you've been using a lot of junk on your skin, if you have a shampoo that's full of sulfates and you're using Tide with bleach in your laundry and all these types of things, that if you have a situation where you get off of that, you're going to see an improvement. Then when you use a really good product that has very pure and nutrient ingredients in it, you're going to see great results. And so a lot of the same things, and like moms will come to me and they'll say, my baby was diagnosed with atypical or asymmetrical dermatitis. I've never heard, Amy, you're the doctor, but I've never heard of asymmetrical dermatitis. What I've heard is chemical burns on one side of the body or the face or whatever. And it comes from my experience, laundry detergents that use phosphorus to make it look, the clothes look whiter and brighter, or high levels of sulfates that they don't have to report because the government says, well, it washes out of your clothes when you use it. And I can prove that that's not true. So it's sort of a matter of getting away from the junk and getting on to the good stuff. And it's across the board. We have seen so many diagnoses that, you know, have gone unsolved with steroids and with all sorts of different creams that people have been prescribed. And yet when they clean up their act and they start using a good natural product that doesn't have junk in it, it's miraculously goes away. And I don't think it's so miraculous.
And I completely agree with you. And it's the same, you know, that I use in my clinic with dietary changes, you know, getting out the bad, adding in the good. And it is amazing the number of people just by that things resolve for them. And, you know, and then we move into, I mean, if somebody's willing, right on the front, we're talking about household cleaners and body products and all that stuff. Sometimes it's a little overwhelming and we start with the food and then eventually, you know, we move into that. I have all kinds of resources on my website because it is so important. And one of the things that I learned from you was I already knew about the laundry detergents. And again, that's a whole nother issue of them free and clear. Free and whatever, all natural, and it's really not. The free and clear Tide is really not free and clear of a bunch of chemicals. But hearing those stories that you mentioned about the, you know, asymmetrical dermatitis and things like that, I think it was you that I learned about really asking about the laundry detergent and clothes and things, particularly sleeping in the bed and stuff like that. So a lot of my eczema patients that are getting better but haven't fully resolved, we really get down deep into what are they using on their skin, but not only that, what are they using in their laundry detergent? Because that's huge for a lot of people.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't try to scare people. It's the sort of the purpose of my book was to educate the people that are new to natural, but more of the not early adopters, but more of the early majority of people that are trying to figure out how to get more natural in their worlds. And I'm semi-allergic. I'm not totally gluten intolerant, but I'm semi-allergic to gluten, and that's natural. So, you know, flour is something that I just happen to be allergic to. But I also have a problem when manufacturers like even baby aspirin sneak in sodium lauryl sulfate into the aspirin itself. And then you get into these issues. Well, if that is destructive to the bacteria in the gut, why do we even have to take probiotics? And what about probiotics for our skin? And it gets really confusing. So when I wrote the book, I wanted it to be something that wasn't scary, but that would sort of help people understand. And every single day as a person who is, I guess, an industry insider, I learn more and more every single day. So back to your original question, it is so tough for the average consumer to figure out what's right and what's wrong. But I do have to say, with this whole thing with the Center for Disease Control, and it's actually 63% of the population claims to have, skin disorders. I believe half are caused by the chemicals are in our environment. And when I look at a lot of the chemicals, you see them in a bottle as a micro dose in a bottle. But when I see them as a raw ingredient, they have EPA safety standards that sometimes require bunny suits and respirators for people to use in the factory. And I don't know why the EPA standards aren't carried over to the FDA and USDA and all those kinds of things, because that's what the EPA does. But the other agencies don't seem to pick up on it.
Yeah. I mean, what is it because? I mean, I think the beauty industry is in the billions. It's a several billion dollar industry. I mean, my understanding from my research of writing an article surrounding this is that it's really, as anything, it's big business. And so there are lobbyists out there really trying to prevent them from having to be labeled or regulated. Is that your understanding of that as well?
Yeah. And I do tend to try to stay away from the policy and the political side of it, because so many people get into that, there's the Environmental Working Group and the Compact for Safe Cosmetics and the Breast Cancer Fund and all these people that really do a good job of that. But I have been asked as an expert to weigh in on reports done by the Environmental Working Group and others. And often it's not the really good products or even the really bad products. It's sort of those middle of the road products that you find in the big box stores that are the biggest culprits. And they'll not only hide what ingredients they use, but they're the definite ones that are greenwashing. They're the ones that put the daisy in the pretty green bottle with the white top out. And that's confusing to people. And that's the part that I think is wrong. I mean, I don't, making products with chemicals is fairly easy. You don't have a lot of cooking or witchcraft or voodoo or any of that stuff involved. Natural products are usually pretty tough to make. And, it's the consumer that has asked for a lot of things over the years, make my product so it doesn't get thin in the summer and thick in the winter. And the chemists say, okay, I'll put propylene glycol in there. That'll stabilize it. And so it's a lot of, I don't want to just blame the big brands. I want to say that they've responded to requests and demands by consumers. And, 50, 70 years, you pick how long ago, almost everything was natural. And now almost everything is synthetic.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you that there's the demand and there will always be the people who will pick the synthetic, and that they much rather have this cream with a high risk of cancer and not have their wrinkles, and, will go on these crazy diets and try to be super thin, and they don't really care about the Diet Coke and all the chemicals. But I completely agree with you. I mean, it's about a labeling, and I do agree that there is this whole industry that has really, if we put natural on it, if we put it in a green box, if we do this, or the whole labeling, no parabens added, people don't know. And I think that's your quest and my quest in all of this, is to educate people so they know. And when those people who know want to make an educated decision, it still is very difficult. I mean, I consider myself way more educated than the average person out there, and I'll still find things sometimes that slip past through me. And hearing your talk, I learned things, and reading your book, I learned things. So it's very difficult for the average person out there often to make the right decision because of marketing and big business. And that's, I think, where we both agree that that's really the thing that makes me the most sad. It's like GMO labeling, right? I mean, what's wrong? Just go ahead and label it and then let people make the decision they want to make. Some people will opt for the cheaper option and they don't believe in GMOs and they could care less. We'll let them, do that. But for those of us that do care, let us know what's in it so that we can make that choice of whether we want that or not.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that.
And so, you know, it's summertime and everybody's heading to the pool and the beach and things like that. One of the things that I love is your sunscreen. It's considered to be one of the safest sunscreens out there. Can you kind of tell people, A, why it's one of the safest sunscreens out there, and then tell maybe the differences between the different types, the zinc oxides versus the this, that, and the other? It's, that's another sort of confusing thing, I think, for people.
Yeah. First thing, Amy, is there's a lot of confusion and stuff going on in the industry right now because the FDA has put out a new monograph that was actually supposed to be in place last year, and it was pushed out because of the big lobbying efforts to this fall. But it used to be that SPF, which people believed was covering and protecting them, was actually only covering UVB, the burning rays. The aging rays, the UVA rays, were actually not even a requirement and still are actually not a requirement of sunscreens until the new regulations come in this fall. So I would encourage people to research, look, our cleangreencafe.com has some articles on it, the subject, but there's a big shift going on and it's causing a lot of problems in the industry. And so right now for the consumer, when you are reading a label, unless it says broad spectrum UVA, UVB, walk away, because it's probably an older sunscreen that's only protecting you from the burning rays. And there's a lot of people, including me, that believe that those burning rays are our early warning system to tell us to get out of the sun. So, and the reason is we want to protect ourselves mainly from the UVA, which is what causes the leather skin and the bags and the, there's a, also a great article on Clean Green Cafe about a truck driver that if you look at his picture, half of his face is just full of like pustules and wrinkles. And it's just amazing that you can see literally down the middle of his face, two ages on this one man. And that was something we republished from stuff that we heard in the industry. And so, to really talk about it, first off is that our sun, Solar RX sunscreen is not a go to beach product. It is an everyday sunscreen for people to use, in their world of living out in the sun. It's not a beach product. And the reason for that is that it's really a moisturizer with sun protection. So it will perspire off, or if you're in, you know, get it wet, it will come off. So, but we use zinc oxide, and we use a special zinc oxide that's covers the full spectrum of UVA and UVB, and we mix it into our Luminos moisturizer. So the product that you just read the ingredients on is our sunscreen product, and we add the zinc oxide. Yeah. Now, in the industry, that what's going on is that there's chemical, what we refer to as conversion chemicals that convert UVA and UVB to some other form, that, and there's oxybenzone, oxycinnamide, PABA, a lot of the ingredients that you hear about. And, they are tested. So they are tested to, if a company says it's SPF 30, UVA, UVB, broad spectrum, you can be assured that they're tested. What you can't be assured of is that the chemicals they use, we do know for sure, have not been tested and are expected in some cases to be carcinogens. And so we like the plain old zinc oxide. We just worked it over so that it none of us look like mimes or ghosts out there. It's a transparent product. So you get the whole ingredients within Luminos plus the zinc oxide to create a daytime moisturizer.
Awesome. Well, thanks for that clarity, because I know it's, again, that's certainly one of the areas, even for me, that I've always found kind of confusing. So, you know, making changes can be expensive. I mean, body products in general. And if you've just bought a new bottle of shampoo or something, and here you are listening to this podcast, wondering, you know, what changes can you make? Ideally, obviously, go home, look at everything in your closets and throw all the bad stuff out and start stockpiling with the new stuff. Most people can't do that. So do you have any advice, Bob, of where, you know, where they should start? I typically recommend people, when you run out of something, go ahead and, you know, refill that one with a newer, you know, green product. Anything, you know, maybe in terms of, are there more toxins in shampoo versus lotion? I mean, where should somebody start?
Well, the first thing you should do, and Wendy, my wife and the CEO of the company, is far more aggressive, so she'd be actually climbing through the call right now, is the first thing she says is if you have a full bottle of something and you look at it, and it's got junk in it that you don't want to use, send it back to the manufacturer. We have so many pictures, Amy, it's funny, of women that have heard me speak or read the book or whatever, and they've gathered all the junk products and put it on their dining room table and taken a picture of it and sent it to us. It's absolutely funny. They're all big grins with their face surrounded by all these bottles and stuff. And we have heard great stories of companies that are in integrity that take it back. Procter & Gamble will send you a bag, put it all in there, and then they'll send you a check back.
Awesome.
I don't like, yeah, it's awesome. I don't like
that's unbelievable.
Yeah, the thing that I would prefer is if they just take the junk out of the product, and they're working that way. I mean, I do believe that a lot of the companies are working to make the products better. They're taking the junk out. I still think you have to put the good stuff in, but they're trying to take the junk out, and they're being pretty transparent about it. But the first thing to do is take the Dirty 30 list or the Dirty Dozen, even just the Dirty Dozen list, and go through and look at all your products that you have on your shelf that has them. If you don't see the ingredient on the product, go to the manufacturer's website, see if the ingredients are there. If not, email them or open up a customer support ticket and say, can you tell me that you have none of these ingredients in there? If not, can you send me a bag so I can return these? And in a lot of cases, they won't tell you. They actually, a lot of cases, the customer service people don't know what's in them. And so they'll send you a bag and fill it up and send it back or take it back to the store, because the stores don't like this. And so when you start taking products back, it's work for them, and they're going to start questioning the manufacturer why products are coming back. It's sort of what I mentioned in the book, that I believe that the majority of the junk in products today is because the consumers have asked for the features of the junk that they put in indirectly. And so the manufacturers have abided by that. And so now if we say, I don't want that junk, they'll start to take it out. So I do believe there, some of them are very responsible. The big brands are very responsible. Often the little brands, like, if you buy dishwashing detergent, often the cheapest stuff on the shelf has the least amount of junk in, because they're trying to make it cheap, if that makes sense at all. And So it's the middle brands, often with entertainers that are sponsoring or supporting these things, or are named after them, or they have a fragrance or something like that that's named after them. In tests, these are the ones that report bad. And to prove that, you can go to the Environmental Working Group study on the fragrance industry, and you'll see it's all the big box middle guys that have the really bad stuff, the phthalates and the hormone disruptors and all that. The really good brands don't, and the really cheap brands tend to not. So it's sort of an irony that it's that mainstream, middle-of-the-road stuff you see on television or that are pop-ups on your Facebook that are the real bad guys.
Well, that's really great information to know about being able to return your products, because I usually just tell people to throw it out. So I'm glad to hear that's an option, and I highly, you know, recommend that people do that. It's, as in anything, I think in this movement, whether it's going to be healthcare, our food supply, our beauty supply, we're all going to be speaking with our dollars. And so when you can return things and go out and purchase something else, we're going to create this grassroots movement to really make some companies change their practices. So, thanks, you know, really appreciate that advice to let people know that they can return that stuff. And then if they, you know,
I was going to say, Amy, the thing that really tell people too, that I like to say to people, is be honest, because a lot of times we've been conditioned that unless something, you know, we'll say, oh, it burned me when I used it, when you really don't like the smell or you're worried that there's chemicals in it. Be honest, because when you take it back, they're going to take it back. They're going to give you your money back, but they're going to, when you tell them it's because I'm afraid of these chemicals you're using, then they get the feedback that's honest.
That's great advice. We appreciate that. So how can people get involved? I mean, I'm certainly aware of the Environmental Working Groups, one of the greatest websites out there for, and certainly my go-to website. We have a link to it on my website, and we have a list of the Dirty 30 on my website as well. So that's just EWG.org. Any other organizations out there that you can send people to either get information or get involved by, you know, donating money to help support? Most all of these are nonprofits that are really, you know, working with our interest at hand.
Well, I hate to say it, but not really. I don't know of
okay. any organization.
The Environmental Working Group is wonderful. They do a really good job as a watchdog. There's a lot of NGOs, non-governmental organizations, these nonprofits that have these agendas, and it's sort of like their agenda is to raise money so they can keep going. And so I'm a little more skeptical about a lot of them out there. So I'm a little sensitive to even mentioning names, because I sort of really what they say doesn't sometimes make sense, or I don't necessarily believe them. What I do believe that people should do, especially in Austin, you've got so many dynamite markets and pharmacies, and your efforts, and I just think that what you do is you do talk with your dollars and support those local small stores that don't have a hidden agenda. They want to provide you products that are healthy. And amazing thing for me, to Amy, and this is not speaking about you, because you're sort of the opposite of what I'm about to say, but often those stores, the people that have worked there 10, 15, 20 years have so much experience that there's such a wealth of information about things you can use and what products you can use to help you, that they're the best place. And that's the support you do by, you know, focusing your dollars on the small stores that are supporting, the education process. So education is it. Google everything. I mean, the biggest piece of advice that I give people is that if you have a question over anything, whether it's severe or minor, go find doctors like Amy, and also Google to find out what other people have experienced.
Good advice. Great advice. So how can, you know, people get a hold of your products, a hold of your book? We have Keys Soap with a hyphen. We'll put the link in there. Any other resources you'd like to provide to patients? Not patients, to our listeners?
Sure. As far as our products, that we're more boutique. We go through and sell through places like your practice, more apothecaries and natural markets. We don't sell through Whole Foods or, the large chain stores, because we really do believe that those trusted advisors within the store will help you to buy the best products, including ours. And so we sort of stay in that direction. Things like our cleangreencafe.com is a blog that's focused on education. The Environmental Working Group's blogs are very focused on education. Compact for Safe Cosmetics has member companies that are all focused on education. So I think that asking questions of the right people, even going out onto forums within the internet, you're going to get a lot of strange answers. You're going to get people that are trying to sell their products, but you're also going to get a lot of heartfelt answers that come from a place of integrity.
Awesome. Well, that was really great. And as I've mentioned to all the listeners before, I mean, it's really kind of just, I stumbled upon these products. I really loved them. Yeah. I reached out to Bob, and then I knew that as I started a podcast here, that this would be information that each one of you would probably enjoy hearing about and that it would be useful for you. So I do hope that you found this useful. If you like their products, you can get them off my website, or you can go to keys-soap.com, and we'll have those links for you as well. And Bob, it's been a real pleasure. And please tell Wendy I said hello. I hope you guys are doing well. And next time you're in Austin, I'd love to see you.
Yeah, we're planning to go through there, so we'll be knocking on your door, Amy. And I do appreciate your time. And this September, we've got a lot of new things coming out at the new Expo East show. So we're gonna branch into some new areas, which I think you can guess at.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to that. We can definitely use more really great natural products out there. So keep up the good work.
Great, Amy. Thanks for your time.
All right. Take care, Bob.
You too. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
To stay in touch with Dr. Myers, you can sign up for her newsletter on her website at dramymyers.com or connect with her on Facebook or Twitter at Amy Myers, MD.